This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we will visit with Stephen Handwerk. He's the executive director of the Louisiana Democratic Party. He's pinch hitting for Karen Carter Peterson, the chair, who's had some plane problems today. But we will talk with Stephen about what's going on with the Democratic Party in Louisiana, as Mary Landrieu is the last Democrat standing in a statewide office, and she's up for re-election seeking a fourth term next year. Stephen Handwerk on Mary Landrieu, the governor's race in 2015, and much more. George Bishop, an acclaimed novelist on the move. His first book was an overwhelming success, A Letter to My Daughter. That's the last time he was with us. He's back. The native of New Orleans has written another well-received book, Night of the Comet. We will talk with him as well. Now the news on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number outside the Baton Rouge calling area, 877-217-5757. You may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. Our guest is Stephen Handwerk. He is the executive director of the Louisiana Democratic Party. In studio, pinch hitting for Karen Carter Peterson, who had some flight issues this morning, but good to see you, Stephen.
Good morning. Good morning. I'm happy to be here.
And you commute from Lafayette every
day. I do. Right? I do.
So that's a bit of a commitment.
You know, it is, but it gives me plenty of time to imbibe as much coffee as I possibly can to get me ready for the day, so I kind of enjoy that.
And you've been on the job as the executive director for how long?
I've been here for about 15 months, so a little over a year.
So yep. a little over a year, and now the election season is soon upon us. Next year,
absolutely.
Mary Loretta Landrieu Snellings seeks a fourth term as U.S. Senator from Louisiana.
Yep.
And she'll have some company on the ballot.
She will, but you know what? She always has. Every single time, she always has. And that's the, I suppose, the great thing about Louisiana. And we're really looking forward to it. We're gearing up. That's my main focus right now, is making sure that we reelect our senator.
Who do you think the opponent will be, the primary opponent?
Well, we certainly have Congressman Bill Cassidy, who's in the race, and that seems to be where all of the attention from the Republican Party is going right now. We feel really confident. We feel really confident.
Another Republican is in the race, Rob Manis.
Yes.
Who, as John McGinnis said on this show the other day, at the very least could force a December runoff, which would be interesting. And Mary Landrieu's had those before as well.
She sure
one
has.
One time. Actually two runoffs, but the first time it was in November. But Cassidy, he's a Baton Rouge guy, doctor, credentials good. To my knowledge, no scandals, so he'll be a formidable candidate.
Well, one would think, but, you know, we don't really see that much excitement for him right now. And, you know, my contention is that he's just not ready for prime time. He's had so many mistakes. You know, this seemingly, you know, it seems now that he's supporting the 999 plan for flat taxes. And he just doesn't seem to be able to pull things together, at least in our eyes. And so we're more than ready. We're more than ready to go up against him.
Any chance Bobby Jindal will get in the race, or do you think he's not?
I don't see that at all. And even he said that he's not interested in that. So I guess we'll have to at least take him for his word for now.
He's also said in the past he's not interested in being president.
Right, exactly. So we'll see.
It could happen, and that would be a different kind of race. But obviously the elephant in the room is President Obama, who is relatively popular. His two elections have proved nationwide, but not so popular in Louisiana. He's gotten to 41% and nothing more in two elections in our state. Will he be on the trail with Senator Landrieu, or will you try to keep him out of the state?
Look, this election is about Senator Landrieu and what she's doing. The one point, though, that I would want to make is, you know, the president is actually more popular than our current governor.
According to Bernie Pinsonat's poll, yes,
exactly.
You are correct.
Exactly. So, you know, at the end of the day, Louisiana, especially the Louisiana Democratic Party, is a big tent. You know, we're home to, you know, moderates like Mary Landrieu, good time populists like Foster Campbell, and even, you know, progressives like Congressman Richmond. So come one, come all, we don't have any sort of litmus test that we have out on the ground for who our members are or who we'll take support from, right?
Right, but a sitting president can be helpful. or hurtful. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I'm old enough to remember when Ronald Reagan was a wildly popular president in Louisiana, and he tried to get Henson Moore elected to the U.S. Senate in 1986. Mm-hmm. Didn't work.
Right.
So I don't know how much effect the president can have as far as bringing voters along with him, but he can raise money for Senator Landrieu, and I would think that might be something that would be utilized.
You know, certainly, you know, money is going to be a big question in this. But we've also seen that Senator Landrieu has been outraising any and all of her opponents from the get-go. And she'll continue to do that. At the end of the day, you know, we'll take all of the support that we possibly can. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure the senator would be more than happy to take support from the president or anyone else who cares to choose to support her. So
297-5633 for Stephen Handwerk, as you can tell, an enthusiastic man about his job as the chair or the executive director of the Louisiana Democratic Party. He works with Karen Carter Peterson. Now, you made a statement, I'm quoting from a profile of you, saying that declaring yourself a Democrat in Louisiana is more difficult than coming out as gay. What did you mean?
Well, look, that was a quote from a little while back, and you know what I was talking about was in Lafayette, you know, living in the community there, which I love. I absolutely love Acadiana, and that was one of the things that was quite interesting, because we kind of joked during an article that I was interviewed in for The Independent there, that people come up to me in the grocery store and they do look both ways, you know, mm-hmm. and then they come and whisper in my ear, "Hey, I'm a Democrat too." Mm-hmm. I've done a lot of radio over there. I've been involved in Democratic politics mm-hmm. for quite some time, and it certainly was easier in the community to come out as, you know, a gay man than it was for me to come out as a Democrat on the radio and on TV over there. So,
well, I know a gentleman who lives in a neighborhood. I'll even name the neighborhood. It's Woodstone, and very nice neighborhood that actually has a mixed group of people who live there. But he told me that when he first moved in, a lady knocked at his door and told him there were some undesirables in the neighborhood. And he said, "What do you mean?" And she said, "They're Democrats."
Goes to prove that point. Yeah.
297-5633 is your number. Chris in Prairieville. Chris, good morning. You're on the air with Stephen Handwerk.
Hey, good morning. I identify myself definitely as a progressive, and I've certainly called Mary Landrieu's office complaining about some of the votes that she makes from time to time. But being a moderate, I think the thing that she really could use the president for is to help get the base out to vote. I think the Republicans and the conservatives in Louisiana aren't going to vote for one way or the other. So I think where President Obama could really help is to get the vote out to support her, and I think she would do fine with that.
Mm-hmm. I recall when she won in 1996, 5,788 votes over Lewis Elwood Woody Jenkins.
Mm-hmm.
The Saturday before that election, she was on the wharf in New Orleans with President William Jefferson Clinton.
Yeah.
So the Saturday before this election, which will be on a Saturday,
yeah,
will she be in the company of President Barack Obama?
You know, look, I haven't looked over there yet, and quite frankly, I don't run the senator's calendar, but I think the caller brings up a really good point. Right now, we have no bigger recruiter for the Democratic Party than the governor. Governor Jindal has done an amazing job at helping people get re-plugged in and re-energized for the Democratic Party. And while, again, we are such a big tent program, I think all voters will need to do as the focus comes to this election and the focus gets a lot more narrow towards the election, it's going to be, as all elections are, it's going to be about a choice. Folks are going to have to make that choice on election day. And do they want to go further to the extreme, which Cassidy seems to be chasing the extreme to try and get their love and support? Or are they going to want to go with a tried and true tested politician that has proven time and time again that she's going to deliver for this state?
Well, there will be national attention on this race, independent of whether the president is active in Louisiana, and we've seen this before. But this is a seat that the Democrats want to hold nationally, and in Louisiana it certainly has great symbolism because, as stated, she's the last Democrat standing in a statewide position.
Well, yeah, you know, and I know that a lot of folks like to go to talk about that. But here's the way I'm looking at things, okay? Out of the 7 largest cities in Louisiana, 6 of them have great, strong Democratic mayors that are actually solving problems, that are actually making their mm-hmm. communities better. And mind you, they're doing it in an environment that has been incredibly hostile. The state government has been incredibly hostile to these local municipalities, to these local mayors. But yet they're making it work. They're solving problems. Jacques Roy up in Alexandria has been doing some amazing work every single time getting kneecapped by this governor with all of the policies that he's trying to implement and push forward. And the great thing is he's actually succeeding. Mayor Glover up in Shreveport, another great example of actually solving problems that people have to deal with on the day-to-day basis. And so while a lot of folks like to predict the demise of the Louisiana Democratic Party, I actually feel really strong with the bench that we have.
What do you think the major issues will be next year?
Look, I think the focus is going to remain on healthcare, and I think it's going to still be about jobs. You know, look, here in Louisiana, the national trend is getting slightly better every single month that we get the numbers on a national level. However, every single month we get the numbers here in Louisiana, at least for the past 6 months, our economy is getting mm-hmm. worse. OK, we're looking at a jobless rate much higher here in Louisiana when Bobby Jindal took over. So what other, you know, they want to use that as a litmus test if the president's doing a good job. Why isn't that not a litmus test on how Bobby Jindal's doing as a governor?
All right. 297-5633, Inkster Show at WRKF.org. A listener, Alice, asks about the governor's race in 2015. What's that looking like?
Look, I think the governor's race is going to be an amazing contest. I think that it's going to be an amazing contest for ideas. I think it's going to be an amazing contest for folks to actually be able to say, we've seen what the Republicans want to do and when they're in power with unchecked power. And this is wrong, okay? Making teachers public enemy number one is wrong. Making all public sector workers public enemy number one is wrong. We have to do a course correction. And I know that we're going to have great candidates all up and down the ticket. You've been involved in politics in this state for a very long time, at least as an observer. And look at what we've got right now. Do you ever recall a time more than 2 years out from an election, people already declaring their candidacies?
Yes, I do. But
okay, maybe I don't, at least in recent memory. Normally, it's all of us sitting at our computers watching the Secretary of State's website during qualifying to see what's going to go on. And already we have races that are beginning to heat up right now.
Well, okay, let's start with Governor John Bel Edwards says he's in, and I think he will run. Anybody else on the Democratic side, or are you trying to clear the field for Representative Edwards?
Look, Representative Edwards is going to have to run his own campaign, and he knows that, and he's working to put a team together, and I am thoroughly energized by the work that he's done in the legislature. I think we've seen what type of a leader this man is. He puts coalitions together to solve problems. Again, that's what they've been working on, is solving problems, and the leadership that John Bel Edwards has shown has been nothing short of impressive and something that people can actually rely on. I'm quite sure, though, as always in here in Louisiana, we're going to have quite a large field of folks that are going to mm-hmm. get into this race. And I say come one, come all. I think that only makes us stronger as a state so that we can actually have a conversation about really where we're going.
But in an open primary, with two candidates surviving in a runoff, presumably, if there's only one prominent Democrat running, you would think that prominent Democrat would make the runoff. If there are two prominent Democrats or three, then you could end up having two Republicans.
Sure. So. Well, I don't know. I don't necessarily know that I agree with that map. That math. I think that right now, I think the voters in this state will start again to focus in on where they want to go in the future. And I think John Bell, as well as many other Democrats, have very good ideas as to where we need to go and the course correction that we need to make from the current glide path that we're on now.
Well, you can't say it, but my guess is that we will not see John Bel Edwards and, say, Mitch Landrieu in the same race. It'll be one or the other, or John Bel Edwards and Jim Bernhardt. Somebody will decide to step aside. And right now, John Bel Edwards is the guy who is putting together a campaign team and the apparatus to make a run in 2015. And by the way, that election is only 26 months away. We'll return with Stephen Handwerk, Executive Director of the Louisiana Democratic Party. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Stephen Handwerk is our guest. He's the executive director of the Louisiana Democratic Party. He's held that position for 15 months. He's been in Louisiana about 15 years, commutes to Baton Rouge from Lafayette, and is a native of Orrville, Ohio.
You got it.
Which is known for?
Smuckers.
And went to Kent State.
Yep.
The alma mater of Nick Saban.
Yeah. Way back in the day, it seems like a lifetime ago.
Well, Louisiana politics is fun.
Yeah.
But it's
It's a full contact sport.
It's a full contact sport. You are correct. Yeah, and you look like you're ready to...
I'm ready.
...to tee it up next year against Bill Cassidy or whoever comes forward.
Come one, come all.
You said, I may be paraphrasing, you didn't think he was ready for prime time. Why do you believe that?
Look, the gentleman seems to struggle with an identity crisis, as far as I'm concerned. He doesn't really seem to know where he fits in the political scheme of things. He has, signed this crazy pledge, that seems to be making him say that he's endorsed the flat tax, something that, a lot of people have a lot of problems with, including myself. And then he won't answer it. He signed the pledge, but now he won't answer any questions
about it. Why is a flat tax a bad thing?
The flat tax is clearly regressive. That would make the individuals on the lower spectrum would be paying a higher percentage of the share of taxes. And I think that that is problematic. I think that that's problematic for the people who are raising a family right now. It is becoming increasingly more difficult. And the working families here in Louisiana need a little bit of help, and a flat tax was only going to hurt them.
Ann in Slidell. Ann, good morning. You're on the air with Stephen Handwerk.
Hi, my name is Ann.
Yeah, we know you're Ann.
I'm sorry. I was calling to ask Stephen, what is the state party doing to help candidates to build their bench?
All right.
I think that's a really good question, Ann. Thanks for your call. The party is doing a lot of great work. And just several weeks ago, I guess it was only 2 weeks ago, that we had a packed room full of activists from all over the state. We even had a bus come in from Shreveport to bring people to our Power Up conference. And during that time, these were grassroots activists that were learning a whole bunch of new skills, from learning how to tweet. I hear there's this thing called Twitter out there, learning how to Facebook, social media, but also, too, really learning how to get involved and play a significant role in campaigns. I think that Democrats will probably always struggle to catch up where money is concerned. But when it comes down to people, okay, mm-hmm. We've got a huge leg up. And making sure that our folks on the ground who want to play a role in politics have the tools and the skills that they need to play that role, we're going to provide it for them. And we're incredibly encouraged. And as a matter of fact, because things went so well in Lafayette, we're going to replicate that all over the state.
You follow other people's Facebook sites. You even got some information about John Fleming off his Facebook page not so long ago, didn't you?
We sure did.
The congressman from Shreveport. What did he do?
He's been out there. I think I think my team probably knows a lot more about this. Quite frankly, I
remember it was about abortion. But maybe somebody is listening who can fill us in.
Yeah, I think what happened was one of the sites, I know it wasn't The Onion, but it was another one of those sites.
That's exactly right.
Exactly, that makes satire and makes it look like news. He fell for it. Something about a drive-through abortion clinic or something.
That's exactly
and,
right.
And he actually posted it as news and said that he was going to make sure that this never happened, and it was really kind of crazy. That a United States congressman would actually fall for something like that. Now, mind you, that happened very shortly after he went on a national news program and said that at the end of the day, after he pays all of his bills, he just simply does not know how he can raise a family on only $400,000 a year. So that's problematic. That is a huge problem, considering that the most of Louisiana, most Louisiana families are actually making do with probably one-tenth of that in raising a family.
Or less.
Or less. You're absolutely right.
Representative John Fleming deleted his Facebook post linking an article in The Onion about a fictional Planned Parenthood abortion plex. The Louisiana Republican alerted his followers to The Onion's article, Planned Parenthood Opens $8 Billion Abortion Plex, and wrote more on Planned Parenthood abortion by the wholesale. Fleming's was, he was mistaken.
To say the
least.
But
we all make mistakes, don't we?
I suppose, but that was a pretty big one.
Well, and is that mistake, is it equal to Anthony Weiner's serial mistakes with his texting and whatever?
What a mess going on up there, right? Yeah. What a mess going on up there.
That's the kind of stuff that usually happens in Louisiana.
Well, I'm not going to comment on that. But you know, I'm really glad that I'm not a New Yorker right now. I'm really glad that I don't have to focus on that because that what a mess. What a mess.
297-5633. Charles on North Foster. Charles, you're on the air with Stephen Handwerk.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Stephen. You mentioned Weiner in New York brings back memories of old hot boy Bob Livingston, but we won't touch that. My question is, how do we, as a Democratic party, really move Louisiana toward accepting expansion of Medicare, of the Medicaid program? And if we are going to have members who are going to change parties in the middle of their term, shouldn't they run for reelection? Shouldn't they have to step aside instead of tricking the voters and then changing their mind?
Wow, two really good questions. You know, first off, when it comes down to expanding access to healthcare coverage, absolutely, we have to do that. However, this governor has decided to put all of his eggs in the basket of his national ambitions and turn it down. You know, this is the governor is the head of the Republican Governors Association, and it seems to me that the governor should probably listen to members, predominant members of his own group, such as Jan Brewer and Kasich in Ohio, Chris Christie up in New Jersey, all of whom have said not to accept these the expansion of Medicaid dollars in the state to give affordable to give access to health care is stupid. It doesn't make sense for the state budget. We are turning down coverage for over 400,000 Louisiana families. It's just unbelievable to me that this governor would do such a thing. And then to call the members of the Senate together and say, look, guys, blame it on me. Blame it on me. Don't do it, but blame it on me. It seems completely reckless. Help me here. What would the other question that the gentleman had?
Well, he asked about Medicaid, which you... You answered, so I think that was his primary inquiry for Charles on North Foster. Now, you're involved in anti-bullying activities. What are you doing along those lines?
Sure. Well, back before I took on the position of executive director, I think that bullying, especially bullying in our schools, has certainly grown to an area that is completely unacceptable. We have children taking their own lives. I mean, and to get to a place of despair for a 12-year-old that they think that there is no way out and that they have to end their life, to me, is just completely unacceptable. So I felt that I could best help by adding my voice to a call for sensible, reasonable ways of addressing this so that schools would actually focus on this. You know, we put a lot of pressure on our schools right now, certainly a lot of pressure on our school teachers to deliver better numbers. But I don't want to forget about all of those mechanisms that we have to track grades. I don't want to forget about the kids. I don't want to forget about what they're going through. And so that I did. I added a lot of what I could do for the organization. We started a group down in Acadiana called Bullying Stops With Me. And it was a really successful program. Again, just calling the attention to get more people to stand up and realize it. First, recognize it and then do something about it. We need all adults to play a role in this.
All right. A listener notes that Rush Limbaugh, the famous conservative commentator, once not so long ago referred to Senator Landrieu as a whore. Obviously, Senator Landrieu is a target for people like Mr. Limbaugh and Mr. Hannity and others on the conservative side who have a microphone. It could be dirty next year.
Well, it could be, but it certainly seems like Rush will have a lot less of a voice since he's getting canceled by almost every radio network that we have known about.
Well, that's not true. He's being canceled by Cumulus, but he's still on the Clear Channel stations, which are in the hundreds, so he doesn't have as much of a megaphone as he did a few days ago. But he's still on a lot of stage.
Certainly, certainly. Well, look, I think that the vast majority of individuals have been looking at the comments by Rush and many others, and they see it completely out of line. The attacks that they made on Sandra Fluke, especially what Mr. Limbaugh did, were completely unacceptable and really beyond the pale. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, Senator Landrieu represents our state, and she's going to do what's best for our state, and she has a history of delivering for this state incredibly well. Having her at the bargaining table, I think, is an amazingly good thing for Louisiana, because she does stood up and fought for us. Now, what she stood up and fought for when Mr. Limbaugh made those unfortunate comments about her, she was actually trying to right a wrong. We had numbers that were artificially inflated here in Louisiana because of Hurricane Katrina and Hurricane Rita. And she was trying to right that wrong so that it wasn't going to be something that was going to hurt us in the future. Now, tell me from a reality where I live, okay, where this is a problem, where the problem was in that you have a United States senator actually standing up and fighting. Now, let's look at a different scenario. A different scenario was with this clawback, okay, of monies that needed to be righted, okay, and what did David Vitter do? David Vitter did nothing. He stood on the sidelines, did nothing. He could have picked up the phone. He could have found a better way. And instead, in 2 years, we have to pay back hundreds of millions of dollars, okay, to the federal government because of a mistake that was made. And that pain is now being forced on us, which is another death knell to all of our university and charity hospitals.
Well, producer Kevin Gallagher meticulously monitors statements by Mr. Limbaugh, and occasionally he plays a few for me. And says,
I sure hope he gets hazard pay for that.
Well, he's smiling. Do you have something that we could listen to from Rush Hudson Limbaugh III, Kevin?
If you talk to economists,
this has never, not once, worked. It has never succeeded. This formula of the middle class leading the economic rebound, it's not possible. The middle class benefits from it, but an economic recovery is not caused by the middle class. An economic expansion is not caused by the middle class.
All right. He's never been in the middle class.
So I find it hard that he can actually say that. But you know what? No matter how exuberant he gets and how energized he gets over that microphone, common logic just does not make sense. Look at what happened after World War II. Okay, the middle class grew exponentially, and that benefited our country. Now, let's think about a few things here, okay? Let's just use common logic to this, okay? All of these corporations that are out there that are making, let's just say widgets, okay? No one can buy their widgets if they don't have any money to do it.
Right.
By expanding the middle class, by helping the middle class grow, and no one's talking about any handouts here. We're just talking about making it just a little bit easier for families to be able to get by. We know that corporate profits have gone through the roof, all the while wages have stayed flat. Okay, that's what we're talking about. And Rush Limbaugh wants to go out there and he'll have all of these great comments. Okay, but at the end of the day, the facts just don't bore it out.
Well, it was 20 years ago this week that the U.S. Congress, by one vote in the House, and Al Gore had to cast the tie, to break the tie in the Senate, that the Congress, with no Republican support, zero votes from GOP members, voted for the Clinton economic plan that was a big boon to the middle class. In that vote 20 years ago, Senator John Breaux voted yes. Senator Bennett Johnston voted no. He voted against it. He almost cost the president the vote. But Mary Landrieu was one of several senators, along with John Breaux, another Democrat, who voted with George Bush to undo what Clinton had done. Did Landrieu make a mistake?
Wow. Well, first off, I have to say that I wish I was probably more up to date on all of those bills and all of that. I'm not. At the end of the day, though, I never have any reason to question Senator Landrieu and the votes that she has cast, because I truly believe that she's really in contact. She really is in touch with what the citizens of Louisiana want. Now, look, oftentimes legislation has so many different things, so many different moving wheels inside a piece of legislation that oftentimes cause members extra amount of heartburn, and they have to cast those votes. If I was up on those, I'd be more than happy to dig into them, but I'm really not, and I apologize for that.
Well, and it's tough for you to criticize your boss, but that was one vote. My guess is that Senator Landrieu wishes she had not made, but she and Senator Breaux. And Breaux, by the way, had voted for the Clinton plan, and then he voted to undo it when President Bush offered a plan. He was basically with the president no matter who was in office, Democrat or Republican. But Mary Landrieu, probably feeling the political pressure, she was running against Susie Terrell that year, and she won. She decided that it was in her best interest and perhaps in the state's best interest to do away with this. And, of course, the economic resurgence we had during the Clinton years was not replicated during the Bush years. Bill Cassidy, the guy you referred to, was on this show a few years ago and said that George Bush was clearly a better president than Bill Clinton. Do you share that assessment?
Goodness. No, clearly not. You know, when we look at, this is how I see it, and this is how I think most Americans see it when they look at it. First off, most of them don't have the time to sit down and really study all of this. But here's what they can look at. For someone who's my age, who's in their early 40s, we have a good recognition of when President Clinton was in office and when President Bush was in office. And here's what I do know. I do know that things were all growing. Things were growing when Clinton was in office. We were actually seeing record number of growth in all different sectors. When President Bush came in, it seems to me that the finger was put on the scale to help large corporations and to help the very wealthy. That, as a test, if you look at the two, as a test of both of those principles, I think that the test bore out that the Clinton method was much better than the Bush method.
Bruce and Walden, you're on the air with Stephen Handwerk, Executive Director of the Louisiana Democratic Party.
Oh, yes. Hello. Well, thanks for having me on. I just wanted to commend Mary for her support for the Medicaid expansion. She's put a lot of pressure on the Jindal administration, and the fight is not over, and I'm hoping she has some plans to continue that.
I have no doubt in my mind that Senator Landrieu is going to keep a full-throated support of this. As the senator has said several times, there is no way possible that the Affordable Care Act is perfect. It's not. However, we are in a position now where we can actually tweak it. But to do nothing is just simply not the answer. We have seen the Republicans now in the House try, including Congressman Cassidy, try now more than 40 times to repeal the ACA, the Affordable Care Act. And each and every time they knew it was going to go nowhere. And as the president said, not once of these 40 votes that they took, not once did it create any jobs. At the end of the day, there's a lot of good stuff that is in the Affordable Care Act. There's also a lot that needs work.
297-5633, 877-217-5757. Just a few minutes, we'll hear from the remarkable writer, George Bishop of New Orleans, back with another well-received novel, and it's called Night of the Comet, but we'll have a few more comments from Mr. Stephen Handwerk, who's getting a workout, and we will talk with him after this 90-second pause on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Stephen Handwerk, Executive Director of the Louisiana Democratic Party, is with us for a few more moments. And we've gone through most of the show without talking too much about Governor Jindal, but it looks like at this point he's not running for the U.S. Senate. He's running for President of the United States of America.
I think president of the world, maybe. But he certainly has set his sights on future office. As a matter of fact, it seems like he's already started that. And he's been certainly out there working. I believe, again, this weekend, he will not be in Louisiana. Not a big surprise. He's going elsewhere.
Where will he be this weekend?
I think I heard that he's going to Iowa.
Iowa?
Yeah.
Well, you know, Sunday is the president's birthday. I thought maybe he would be going to a birthday party or so.
I probably think that that's not going to happen.
Don't think so.
Don't think that's going to happen.
But those who discount him, he's a tenacious politician.
Well, certainly. I think I probably owe like a muffin basket or something to him because, quite frankly, Governor Jindal has been the biggest recruiter that I could ever ask for the Louisiana Democratic Party. So I think I might need to thank him for that.
Well, the Democratic Party, by numbers, is still way ahead of the Republican Party. But for the first time ever, the Louisiana Democratic Party does not have a majority of the overall electorate.
Right.
And those numbers seem to be sliding, and there are now more African-American Democrats than there are white Democrats in Louisiana.
Right.
Nothing wrong with that.
Sure.
But it's apparent that a lot of the whites have moved to either independent or Republican.
Right. Well, look, at the end of the day, I think Louisiana, especially, and this holds true in many other states as well, that folks really do consider the candidate. And what we do know is that as the Republicans push further and further to the right, they're becoming a lot more extreme. And those extreme tactics are turning off a lot of folks in the middle. After all, we do know that the governor is down 21 points from where he was just a year ago in approval ratings. Now, though, the thing that's really interesting about that is he's actually down 26 points with independents.
Well, okay. it'll be interesting to see. You're referencing the Pensonet poll? Or
yes.
Do you have? Okay. Well, after he completes his 64 parish tour, it'll be interesting to see if his poll numbers go back up some.
Well, you know what? It's interesting that right now
that
the, well, to me, it's kind of interesting. And let's think about this. The governor actually issues a press release to announce to everyone that he's going to start doing his job. I mean, the governor should be touring the state. The governor should be meeting with people. But yet he had to take out a whole press release and announce to everyone that he's going to be touring the state.
I don't think there's any issue with that, Stephen. But I think there should also be press releases every time he goes out of state. If we're going to have press releases when he's in Tensaw Parish and Caddo Parish and Red River Parish and Bienville Parish, we should also have press releases when he's in Iowa and New Hampshire. Curiously, he goes to those states quite a bit.
He does, and I wonder why that is.
I wonder.
Yeah.
Iowa in particular.
Iowa especially.
He has this real fascination with Iowa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Wonder why that is.
A lot of good farming land in
I guess
Iowa.
So.
Yeah, so.
Wonder what his thoughts are on ethanol.
Well, it'd be nice if he were to come on this show and we could talk with him about ethanol and other matters.
Can't wait to call in for that show.
That's probably why he won't come on anytime soon, but I'd love it if he did. And the governor, like you, I'm sure he could joust with the best of them.
Sure.
If he wanted to.
Well, people have told me that I talk fast, but my goodness. I can barely keep up. I almost need subscript and need to slow it down when the governor talks.
And he went to Brown University. You went to a state university, a good one, Kent State.
Yep.
And I would imagine that you got a very good education there.
Well, I wasn't a Rhodes Scholar, but you know what? I think I can hold my own.
Okay. Well, thank you. Appreciate it, Stephen Handwerk.
You, Jim.
And let's do it again. And thanks for pinch hitting for Karen Carter-Peterson. We got to get her on again.
There you go. We'll make it happen.
She's a live wire, too.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care, my friend. George Bishop is in house. Native of New Orleans, graduate of University of New Orleans, and the author of Letter to My Daughter, and his latest is Night of the Comet. Earned his MFA from the University of North Carolina at Wilmington, and has lived and taught in Slovakia, Turkey, Indonesia, India, Japan. How was India?
India was one of the most difficult places I've ever lived.
Why?
I guess because of the poverty there that you see all around you mostly, and the pollution. Yeah.
What part of India?
I was in the south, in the city of Hyderabad in Andhra Pradesh. But good morning, by the way.
nice to see you. You're back in New Orleans.
I am. Yeah. I moved back there about 3 years ago.
And It is notable how many great writers did some of their best work while writing and living in New Orleans.
Yeah. I've been just working on this book full-time for the past 3 years in New Orleans, and it's been good for that, yeah.
As I stated, you were on this show when you wrote a letter to my daughter.
Yeah, two, 3 years ago, right.
And Night of the Comet is getting the same kind of maybe a little better reviews than Letter to My Daughter.
I think which, better so far.
Yeah. And Letter to My Daughter got some good ones. So fill us in on Night of the Comet.
So The Night of the Comet is a novel set in 1973 in a small town in South Louisiana that I call Terrebonne. And the backdrop of the story is the coming of Comet Kohoutek. Do you remember that comet?
I do.
Yeah, okay. Well, that kind of tells your age a little bit.
1973.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so that's the backdrop of the story. And the protagonist is this high school science teacher who's very frustrated in his job. And he kind of hitches all his aspirations to this comet, being the comet of the century, the most spectacular astronomical event that they've ever seen. And then there's his family also, who also they have their own dreams and aspirations that get tied up in this comet coming.
Well, among the reviews, here's one from Minrose Gwynn saying, hilarious and heart-wrenching, ethereal and earthy, a heavenly book. Nobody writes about the gravitational pull of parent-child relationships, all that we yearn for and all that we can't have, mm-hmm. like George Bishop. So it's a book about more than a comet.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because really, you know, the comet's just the backdrop for the story. It kind of provides, like, the dramatic arc for the story. But the real focus of the story is on this family, the Broussard family, mm-hmm. the father, his wife, their daughter, and the 14-year-old son, who's the narrator of the story.
I was 14 in 1973, so I could relate to this book.
Okay, yeah.
He receives a telescope from his father.
Exactly, right.
What happens?
Right, and so the dad wants to use the telescope to try to build a bridge to his son. But the kid, 14 years old, he's not interested in astronomy like his father. Instead, he uses the telescope to spy on the new neighbor, the daughter of the new neighbors, this rich oil family that has moved into a big house on the other side of the bayou.
And what does he find in his telescope?
Well, you'd have to read the book see that.
You can tease us.
But so while the father is spying on the stars, his son is spying on the new girl on the other side of the bayou, right?
A girl.
Yes.
And she must be an appealing visage in his telescope.
Yeah. Well, the boy is falling in love for the first time in his life with the 14-year-old girl on the other side of the bayou.
Do you ever have an experience like this, George?
I've fallen in love.
Yeah,
certainly.
But through a telescope?
No, I haven't. No. And in fact, I've never owned a telescope.
Yeah.
I still don't own one, but I'd like to now.
Well, I didn't have a telescope when I was 14, but after reading your book, maybe I should have. I had a crush on Shirley Jones when I was 14.
Yeah, well, who didn't?
Yeah. Well, George Bishop is an interesting man. You started as an actor, right?
Yeah, that's right. Right.
Went out to Hollywood?
Right. Well, I graduated not from UNO, but from Loyola in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. I grew up in Jackson, Louisiana, and then Baton Rouge. Went to school in New Orleans and then moved to Los Angeles and worked as an actor for 8 years.
And you were in some interesting productions.
Interesting, yes. Yeah, I did a lot of bad TV sitcoms. And
something called Teen Vamp. Is that right?
Yeah, you've done your homework, right.
Teen
I was the star of a B movie in the 80s called Teen Vamp.
What was that about?
Well, yeah, it was about a teen vampire, you know.
Okay, well, you're into writing about teens in this case. Teen Vamp.
And then after my 8 years in Los Angeles, I went as a volunteer teacher overseas to what was Czechoslovakia then. And so that's when I began my career teaching English as a foreign language overseas. And I did that for about a dozen years. And that's also when I began writing more in earnest, was when I went overseas.
And your first book, as I stated, was a huge success. And right off the start, you got a major publishing house. How did you do that?
luck. It wasn't my first book. It was my first published book. It was actually the fifth novel that I'd written, so I'd been working at this for a long time.
Had you been rejected?
Yes, and I'd submitted the other novels, too. So I'd been doing it for a long time.
So what happened to the previous four?
They're on a shelf in a closet somewhere.
One of them wasn't Night of the Comet, though, right?
No, this was completely new. But with Letter to My Daughter, then I finished that while I was in India, and then I was back in Baton Rouge the summer of 2008, and I began making inquiries to some agents that I had contacted before. One of them responded to it, and within a month, I had a contract with Ballantyne Random House, a two-book contract. So that led to the publication of Letter to My Daughter in 2010, and now this one.
Night of the Comet.
Right.
Baton Rouge and LSU are mentioned prominently in Night of the Comet.
Yeah, well, in fact, the novel opens in Baton Rouge in the year 2000, because the son now, with the telescope, has grown up, and he's living in Baton Rouge with his own family, and he's thinking back to this time when he was a boy in 1973. So that kind of frames the story.
You have lived all over the world, and you've come back. Why did you have this pull to return to Louisiana, George?
You know, it surprises even me. Part of the reason was that my novel was coming out, and I wanted to be here when the novel was released, Letter to My Daughter. But the interesting thing for me is that both of these novels are set in Louisiana. And in fact, I've lived more of my life outside of the state than I have in Louisiana. But I grew up in Louisiana, so I guess it's in my blood, and it's finally, I guess, coming out in these novels that I'm writing about Louisiana.
Well, you start with a quote from that great philosopher, Joni Mitchell.
Yes, yes.
We are stardust, we are golden, we are billion-year-old carbon, and we've got to get ourselves back to the garden.
Yeah.
And it begins here in Baton Rouge. You can still see the stars at night. Our backyard abuts the last patch of pasture land in the neighborhood, a piece of the Pike Burden Farm still hanging at the edge of the city. On a clear night like tonight, when my wife and boy are busy inside, I like to leave my desk for a few minutes and walk down to the rear end of our yard, down to where my quarter acre ends at a low ditch and a barbed wire fence, and take in the night air. Beyond the fence, the land stretches out flat as calm water. Stands of pine and oak ring the field. Off in the far corner, a cow pond gleams in the moonlight. From the east comes the swish of cars passing on Perkins Road. From the north, the distant rumble of trucks on I-10.
Yes.
That's how Night of the Comet starts, with this fabulous storyteller, George Bishop. You've got to have a very active imagination to write as you do.
Yeah, thank you. But it's also a lot of work because, like you, I was in junior high school when Kahootek came, and so I don't remember it except for the excitement. And so I had to do all the research for the science in the book, you know, and then it was a question of trying to line up the comet timeline with the family timeline to make all those elements work together. So, yeah, imagination, but also just a lot of research and work.
Only 160 million miles away. Well, you've had such success with these two books, Letter to My Daughter and Night of the Comet. I would imagine your publisher is chomping at the bit for the next work from George.
Well, this one just came out on a Tuesday, so you know we have to see it's still how it's going to do. I mean, it's doing well so far, but I would hope another book would be in the pipeline with Ballantyne, yes.
Will you stay in New Orleans?
For a while, I think so, yeah.
That's not a ringing endorsement.
You know, I've lived overseas for so many years, and I've taught overseas mm-hmm. for
what
so many years.
What was your favorite place overseas?
That I kind of get restless, I guess, staying in one place. I've already been in New Orleans for 3 years, and it seems like a long time to me.
Went to school there.
Right.
Grew up there. What part of the city?
I live uptown.
Okay.
Now.
Where did you spend your earlier years in New Orleans?
I didn't know. I grew up in Jackson, Louisiana.
But you...
And then I went to Loyola.
From Loyola.
Right. Right.
And you must have lived...
I lived in the dorm.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, in a nice part of town.
Right.
So where overseas will you go if you venture abroad again?
Well, you asked me where my favorite place was. Mm-hmm. Just before I came back to Louisiana, I was living in Tokyo for a year, teaching with the University of Montana program there. And I really enjoyed Tokyo. That was maybe one of my favorite cities. And such a contrast to India, which is where I was before.
What was captivating about Tokyo?
Tokyo, the city, it's like, I always thought of it as like a future city. It's very, very crowded and busy, but everything works very well, and it's very clean and efficient. It's an amazing city. It's like a huge modern city that works well.
And Americans are treated well there.
They are. I mean, there's a certain kind of polite distance from the Japanese that, and I think every foreigner there will tell you about this, but very, very polite. Yeah, wonderful people.
Well, George Bishop is back with a vengeance from Ballantine Books, a major book that is getting nationwide attention, Night of the Comet. And tomorrow, he will be at Barnes & Noble City Place, and the 4th at the Cabildo in New Orleans, and Monday, the 5th, at the Garden District Books, New Orleans. But tomorrow, 1 o'clock
at Barnes & Noble
City Place right here. You can meet George Bishop and pick up a copy of Night of the Comet if you so wish. Hope you have a good weekend, everybody. For Kevin, I'm Jim. Thank you for listening. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.